Morning, everyone. We don't have a quorum yet, but I think we will get going with House File 418. I see we have the author here, and we'll and Representative Downey. Once we get a quorum, I'll interrupt you and call it to order officially. But if you want to start working on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill before you here is House File 418. And with just a brief bit of introduction, I can then walk through the bill and entertain questions, and we can hear testimony, too, if there are folks who want to testify on it. Madam Chair, we heard, I think, a couple weeks ago, the bill to consolidate the technology functions within the executive branch agencies into a more central shared service kind of structure under the Office of Enterprise Technology. And if folks remember, the purpose of that and kind of the design of that was to take all of the overlapping and redundant functions of managing the assets and the people and the processes for technology-related functions in the executive branch agency, bring them into one centralized place and provide that service back to those executive branch agencies. This bill, 418, attempts to start the process of doing the same thing for what you might, just using a colloquial term, call the back office. So the administrative functions of accounting, financial reporting, procurement, fleet services, human resources, and payroll services would all, in this bill, the people and the systems and the business functions of those overall business processes in the executive branch would come under the oversight and management of the Department of Administration. And the reason for doing that, members, is that we have invested a significant amount of money in the new SWIFT accounting system. For those of you who were here 2 years ago, remember that I think we're investing $60, maybe even $80 million by the time all is said and done to deploy a uniform and consistent accounting system. And as we have heard in testimony from the Department of Administration, facilitating through that fairly uniform and consistent business processes and reporting and data, all those kinds of things across all of the executive branch agencies. So in some ways, we've done the hardest part, or are doing the hardest part of the work, which is to put in a common technology platform and an accounting system platform underneath all of these business processes. And now there's a ready-made opportunity to try and find kind of organizational and operational efficiencies and savings as a result of that. And if some of you were on state government finance or other committees last year and heard the testimony defending the investment in this new accounting system, it all came back to the return on investment. And there's significant return on investment for that accounting system implementation in the area of procurement, where you can combine all of the contracts and the purchasing power of the state by virtue of the fact that all of the procurements run through the same system. There is similarly an opportunity like that just in the core business processes. Writing checks is writing checks is writing checks. Processing cash receipts is very similar. And when you're all on the same IT platform, whether you sit in the Department of Human Services or Department of Transportation, those business processes look exactly the same because you're on a common core technology platform. And I handed out an article. I hope members have it on their folders. It's from Government Technology, talking about the state of Ohio, who has done exactly this thing. And I underlined a couple of lines in the second paragraph there. Very interestingly, the state of Ohio back in 2007 was just coming off the implementation of a common, what they call ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning application system, much like we are. Interestingly, it's the exact same software vendor, same software company, PeopleSoft, in Ohio as here. And so on the heels of their 2007 implementation of a common system platform, they went ahead and started the process of integrating all of these business functions into a shared service center. Interestingly, in Ohio, and this isn't contemplated in the bill I'm proposing, they actually outsourced that function to a private contractor. The people from the state agencies actually became employees of the private contractor, and there were various employment guarantees and the like. But now these services are provided back to the agencies on a contract basis governed by service level agreements, et cetera. So here's one state that has actually done what I'm proposing here. Other states are doing it at varying degrees for expense reimbursement and fleet and other things in a piecemeal fashion. This bill says, let's take the people and the assets associated with these functions in the state executive branch agencies and put them under the control of the Department of Administration, and then have them come back to us and report the statutory language and the changes they would like to see to actually implement a full-blown shared service model for these business processes in the executive branch. So with that, members, just a very quick run-through on the bill. It's fairly straightforward. Section 2 just describes the services that would be rolled into the Department of Administration, and Section 3 describes the transfer mechanism, which is the executive branch authority to do the kind of job responsibility combinations and things, and then to have the report back from the Department of Administration on January 15th to instruct us as to the statutory requirements necessary to actually affect the overall integration that they would design. So with that, members, I would just open it up to questions.
Thank you, Representative Downey. We do have a quorum, so we'll call the meeting officially to order. And we do need to still move your bill before we start discussion. Representative Murray.
Madam Chairman, I would move House File 418 be recommended to pass and refer to state government.
Okay, everybody. Representative Murray moves House File 418 be recommended to pass and be referred to state government finance. Do members have questions for Representative Downey this time? Maybe we'll start if there's any witnesses that would like to come and testify for or against Representative Downey's bill. Okay. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I wanted to call you Mole now for some reason.
I'm just wondering, Representative Downey, are we talking about people that are currently employed in other agencies now becoming employees of MMB, or can you explain that?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair and Representative McFarland, yes, exactly. It's a little hard from our perch in the legislature to define exactly how those people would be deployed if the Department of Administration would choose to physically consolidate them immediately, whether they'd leave them kind of out in their agencies and start to build the organizational mechanisms before physically moving people. Short answer is yes, we'd take the people and all of the related assets and budget accounts for those people and locate them under the control of the Department of Administration.
Any other questions for members? Representative Simon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, Representative Downey, to what extent do you have buy-in from the current executive branch? Are they okay with this? Are they entertaining the idea? Have you talked with them?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, thank you. I actually wanted to include that in my introduction of the bill. The new commissioner of the Department of Administration just came on board. So my request of the committee is that you would grant the passage of this bill to state government finance, recognizing that there's a lot of work to be done. I very intentionally tried not to make this bill prescriptive. It's not even as prescriptive as the OET consolidation bill, which wasn't very prescriptive itself. It really is kind of a planning and design document saying that the legislature wants us to embark on this process with the Department of Administration, and my commitment to everybody here is that I would work with the new commissioner to try and find enough common ground to do this.
Do you have a follow-up question, Representative Simon? No. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, to that point you just made, line 16, you do have the language must allow an executive agency to obtain services, so it does seem a little prescriptive. You must instead of may. What are your thoughts about that?
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein. Actually, thank you. That's a good catch. I know we changed the must to may in the Office of Enterprise Technology bill, and that is a change that we should make here as well. So I don't know if you wanted to offer an oral amendment. I'd be glad to receive that. I don't know if you support the bill and want to be on the hook for having orally amended it, but I'd welcome that change. That's a good catch in the language of the bill.
Representative McFarland.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that we change on line 1.16 the word must to me.
Okay, Representative McFarland moves that on line 1.16 we change the word, we strike the word must and replace it with may. Perhaps staff, is there any other changes that would have to follow that? Okay, I think everybody understands the amendment. All those in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Downing. And I guess this sounds good. I mean, it sounds, you know, we're looking at trying to consolidate the stuff. I mean, with computers nowadays, we can run more stuff on them. We don't need to have 20 different computer systems. I understand that. Do you foresee this? I know we're not a finance committee, but do you foresee this costing an initial money up front to get the computer system set up in a centralized place so that we have a big enough computer system that we can handle all this, you know, as we consolidate these all into this new system? Have you looked at that? I mean, and looked at asking for a fiscal note on this, and are we going down that road?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, thank you. That's great questions. A couple of points about the actual system technology. Again, for those who are on the committee, they might remember this. Those who weren't probably wouldn't. But we did actually invest in the centralized system technology, and all of that is on a common platform already. And that's, I think, really the only way we can even contemplate doing this. If that weren't in place, it would be really difficult. So the expense and the consolidation and all of the organizing of the accounting systems and the core servers and all of that underneath the systems, all of that is in place, basically done. They're ready to go live on that new platform as of July 1, assuming they can still make that go live date. So that part of it is all done, and I don't know if that completely answers your question, but I think what I'd envision with this is that if we can have the Commissioner of Administration kind of overseeing all of those people who are doing literally the exact same functions now on the exact same accounting system, that would position him or her to start moving towards a more physical redesign of all of those people. And again, that the timing of that and the speed of that would be something that the executive branch would need to recommend back to us here on at the end of this year. So I think it would be something where this is a long-term process, but we'd be starting it by virtue of this, and kind of the legislature would be sending a signal to the executive branch, we want to move in this direction.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then you envision by doing this we're going to save money by eliminating positions. Is it your intent when you do this to try and do this by attrition and as people retire and leave that we consolidate more down, or are you looking to do this as cutting positions as they put these all people together and deciding who's not going to be here and eliminating positions that we currently have?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, so we have a few different bills that are moving kind of as a package, if you will, that I think work together and are complementary. The consolidation of the IT functions, the workforce reduction plan that I had in a bill previously that targets a 15% executive branch reduction over a four-year period, hopefully through attrition and retirements, but if necessary through early retirement offerings, and I guess if the executive branch chose through furloughs or actual reductions and layoffs. So these all fit together. And I remember our discussion when those earlier bills were coming that we needed to have mechanisms, or we needed to have, you know, ideas for how we redesign these things to support those workforce targets. And this is one of those ideas. And again, for those who weren't on the committee last year, we had testimony, I think, from the Department of Human Services indicating that maybe they alone had, I'm remembering it, it was over 20 accounts receivable processing functions just within their agency. And so I think the advantages aren't, cost is one advantage, certainly, and that's part of what you would drive to, but consistency, the auditability, the internal audit, the controls that you would get, accuracy, better service, maybe even a higher level of service to the end user agencies, kind of 24/7 online services to citizens if there's citizen access points in some of these areas too. So I think there's better service, reduced cost, and better controls all as part of this. It's not simply a cost takeout idea. It's broader than that, certainly.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably more of a comment than anything. Representative Downey, I know that we have a lot of professional employees within our agencies and that do a really good job, and I think that they really are also looking for ways to work more efficiently. And so I guess I'm hoping that you'll work with those stakeholder groups to also be involved in this and collaborate on this movement.
So. Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, exactly. And I hope in both the Office of Enterprise Technology Consolidation and the back office consolidation bills that I put forward, these are not highly prescriptive. I mean, we are not, as a legislature, going deep into these agencies or even telling them exactly how to structure these things or the timing by which to get all of this done. Really handing over to the executive branch with our legislative direction on where we'd like them to get, let them implement. And again, a couple of you here were in our committee hearing on state government finance, and they were talking about the lean process improvement activities and the many benefits. And those lean activities tend to start at the very bottom, the tasks and the subtasks and the data and the pieces of paper, and drive improvement into the processes from that level. And that's an extremely valuable activity. This is saying, you know, kind of from the organizational structure perspective, we're going to drive to some organizational changes, and what that will do is that it will actually encourage and drive even more opportunity for those work groups and those task level groups to do a better job and be part of the design of the new function. So absolutely, it's incumbent upon the people doing those kinds of things to improve things to actually make this work well.
Any other questions from members? Anyone else in the audience need to testify? I'll make that offer one more time. Okay, well, seeing no further discussion, Representative Murray renews his motion that House File 418 be re-referred as amended and recommended to pass and re-referred to State Government Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. I'd like to once again recognize the member from St. Louis County, or excuse me, St. Louis Park.
Easy.
Representative
there.
Simon.
A long-standing rival.
Yes,
well,
I know.
Not. Members, once again, I'm going to introduce to you, this is, I know, the third day. I think this is the final day. We've got a group of St. Louis Park ninth graders who are here. Obviously, this is staggered over the course of the week, and this is, I think, the last crew that's here, but I want to welcome them to the committee here today.
Welcome to the committee. Thanks for coming. Representative Downey to House File 419. Where does this bill need to go? I didn't get a chance to talk to you beforehand. State Government Finance?
Madam Chair, if we could, I would like to have this bill introduced for discussion today, and if you don't mind laying it over and holding it here, I would like this to be a little bit of a working session with the committee, and there might be some people who want to testify. This is a fairly large concept that I'm introducing here, and there's been quite a bit of feedback to me personally, and so I don't want to push this faster than the committee wants to. So if you're all right, we can lay it over here and keep it here for now.
Thank you, Representative. I will lay over the bill. We will discuss the bill, and we'll ask questions, and if anybody would like to speak to the bill. But everyone, please keep in mind this bill is, as Representative Downey said, going to be laid over, and this is just some discussion that we're going to have as we need to make some very tough decisions this session. So, Representative Downey, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could, before walking through the bill, offer, well, I guess I can't offer the oral amendment, but if Mr. Shepard could perhaps describe and somebody could offer for me two minor, or, well, actually not minor, one of them is, they're both significant, they're small in terms of text changes, but if Mr. Shepard could advise the committee on the oral amendments.
Representative Downey, I think I haven't moved the bill.
Oh.
Since it's going to be laid over. I think we can do that, but I think I have to move the bill and then make the amendment, and then I'll lay it over again at the end, if that would be okay. So I will move that House File 419 be recommended to pass and be referred to state government finance. And that will be a temporary motion, I believe, only to get the oral amendment on. And the oral amendment, I will move that as well. That is to...
Madam Chair and members, Representative Downey spoke to me just before the meeting started about an amendment to reinstate the Department of Veterans Affairs as a separate department in this bill. And so there are so the Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs would remain separate. And I did have a chance to write that up during the meeting, and so I have copies of that. If you would like those distributed, and then I do also have a I didn't get a chance to proofread this because I was here, so I have a couple of small changes to make orally to this written amendment.
Okay. Well, this is obviously didn't meet the rule, but I think since we are going to just lay this over, no objections, we'll still move on the amendment so that we can go forward with the discussions. Why don't, while everybody gets a chance, do you want to talk about the amendment at all? And then we'll go back and hear from Mr. Shepherd again as to the other.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill is brief overview of the bill, and then I can get to the amendment. So the bill attempts to reduce the number of cabinet-level positions and then allow the executive branch, using their reorganizing authority, to reposition various programs and functions under the 8, now 9, contemplated executive branch cabinet-level positions. And in looking back at some previous models from the Carlson administration where this was looked at other states, I originally intended to combine the Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs, and upon advice in the last 24 hours, I came to realize that there is some federal funding streams and some complexities with the leadership of those two groups, the Adjutant General and how that position would fit into an integrated department. It clearly doesn't seem to be a great fit, and the places where that has been done are states where there are much smaller organizations, and so I think it's best to keep those decoupled and keep the organizational structure as they are. So that's one place where we would back off from the integration. So that's the intention of the amendment that Mr. Shepherd passed around.
Did anyone have any questions to the amendment as they're looking at it? And then perhaps we'll take a second here. And when Mr. Shepherd's ready, if it would be okay, I will just incorporate Mr. Shepherd's recommended changes into the A2 amendment, which I previously moved. Questions? You ready, Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair and members, on line 1.5 of the amendment, it should read, page 1, line 21, delete military and Veterans Affairs. So the word military should be added there. And then on line 1.8 of the amendment, that whole line, it should read, page 2, delete line 19.
Could you clarify again on 1.8, Mr. Shepherd, to delete the words line 19?
Madam Chair, members, if you just delete everything that's on line 1.8 right now, scratch out that whole line, and then it should instead just read page 2, delete line 19.
Okay, so the change is 1.5, we'll add the words military before the word and Veterans Affairs. And then on line 1.8, we will strike the words delete and Veterans Affairs, and instead it will say page 2, delete line 19. Is that correct? I will incorporate that into the A2 amendment. Did anyone have questions for the A2 amendment? Hearing no questions, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. Back to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence on that, and I appreciate all of our military folks and our veterans who are here, including the Adjutant General, for the feedback and also for your presence here and for your service to our state and our country. Much appreciated, and thank you for being here. Very briefly, the bill, as I mentioned, attempts to reduce the number of cabinet-level positions and very importantly, does not contemplate the elimination of entire agencies or entire functions within the executive branch agency complex as it exists today. There has been some feedback, and I've received some emails asking me why I'm abolishing, you know, certain departments, and the reality is we're not. We're simply reducing the number of cabinet-level positions that oversee all of those functions. And many of us, probably all of us, have looked at places where there are overlapping and duplicate entities or functions within agencies and said, boy, we should be able to consolidate those. And this bill says let's start at the top and reorganize the executive branch cabinet level positions and then allow the executive branch to regroup all of the functions and programs underneath that. And you say, well, why go through all of this? I think for a couple of reasons. Number one, if in fact we would do the consolidation of the technology, and so we lift all of the management of the technology functions out of these program agencies, and if we would do the same thing with the administrative services, the back office, the accounting functions, et cetera, and have those provided by the Department of Administration, you now have a much leaner set of executive branch agencies. If you go out and look at the org charts on all of these agencies, they all have an administrative services division. And part of the task of the commissioners is to manage the administrative support functions and the technology functions in their agencies. So I think by consolidating those things into these shared service organizations, we've actually refocused the agencies on their primary mission, which is the programs they run and administer. And so now we'd have an opportunity then to actually think about kind of the vertical silos of the agencies to look for intelligent ways to group those functions better, and I'm guessing locate a lot of places where there is overlap and redundancy where we could serve people better and again, reduce costs. So this reduces the executive branch cabinet level agencies to nine, and they're listed in Section 1 of the bill. And then instructs the executive branch to do the consolidation and reassignment of duties in Section 6 on page 4 and report back to the legislature with any statutory changes necessary for that reassignment of duties.
Does anyone have a phone issue? Could you just please check your phones to make sure that they're...
I was in this room. A couple of us were in this room just a couple hours ago. We had the same issue, and I know the audiovisual guys will be prowling around, pulling on mics and checking where we have a loose connection somewhere. This is really annoying, but we just kind of have to bear with it. Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe it's my microphone that fell through yesterday.
Well, if you're kicking your wire, put your feet down. Yeah.
Well, we could work on yours, Representative Winkler, I'm sure. It's an idea.
So, Madam Chair, just one final comment.
Okay.
So the executive branch cabinet-level positions are reduced in number. The functions are retained and hopefully reorganized in an effective and efficient way. And the bill assumes that there would be a new set of either deputy commissioners or director-level positions that would continue to manage all of these major programs, hopefully in a more effective and intelligently designed way. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at this list and from your comments about the amendment, about you found that there were federal funds, that there was an issue with that by dividing or making them one division. Have you looked into that with many of these other departments? I know transportation gets a lot of federal funds through the highway department, and I'm sure there's other ones here that get federal funds that might make it difficult to put them together in other divisions, and how do you see these going together? Like, where do you see Department of Transportation going? Because that's sort of a function that's different than a lot of the other ones that are here, and you're eliminating the Department of Transportation.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nelson. So specifically regarding the Department of Transportation, and again, I don't want to speak for how the executive branch might actually end up doing that, but my sense is that the Department of Transportation is a logical fit within the Department of Commerce. The personal statement and opinion is that I think as a standalone entity, the Department of Transportation tends to be a place where lots of different social engineering and other kinds of intended outcomes are kind of perpetuated through the Department of Transportation. And my sense is that transportation is a function of the commerce of the state of Minnesota. And so I would look at it personally as something that would fit logically under the department of, or under the cabinet level position of commerce. One person's opinion, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the concern I would have there is the Department of Transportation, most of their functions are funded by gas tax, which is constitutionally dedicated towards that. And the I guess I would see the concern I would have is that it's always been a concern in transportation as people try to figure out ways to bleed some of that money off and to fund other things. And it's always a constant fight in transportation. And that would be a concern I'd have if that was put someplace else. Somebody could look at that as a cash cow that we have. The money is going to be dedicated here and bleed that money off to issues that aren't what they're supposed to be constitutionally for. So I guess that's a concern I have, but I think as we go through this, we're going to have to look at all these to make sure that, as you said, with the military affairs and the veterans affairs, that there aren't constitutional issues or funding issues that we could end up costing ourselves a whole lot more money by doing this than what it's costing us now, what we're trying to save.
Representative Downey, do you want to comment on that?
No, Madam Chair, great points and all part of the discussion that I'm hoping to have and I'm glad we're raising here today. Thank you.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, is this primarily a cost savings measure for you, or is there improved performance? What's the primary mission of consolidating these agencies from your perspective?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, all of the above. Representative Winkler, I think there's an opportunity for eliminating overlapping and redundant functions. There's probably an efficiency and cost reduction opportunity. And I think there's probably a streamlining of the executive branch function, never having been the chief executive, having some awareness of that. As a governor, having however 23 direct reports, it's very difficult for one person to manage that many individuals or oversee them at a strategic level. So I think it brings some benefits to the overall executive branch strategic and planning functions, too.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, do you have any, the most recent merger we did was putting Department of Labor, I'm sorry, Dewar, not Dolly, but Dewar into finance, and then we had a bill to rename it Minnesota Management and Budget, and they bought new signs. And do you have any follow-up knowledge on money that was ever saved from rearranging those functions?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, well, a couple of points. First, the bill only deals with the cabinet-level appointees and, again, relies on the executive branch to do consolidations and reorganizations as it sees fit. So I am hopeful that they would look at every one of those kind of steps within the broad parameters of the bill and do them wisely and in a cost-effective way. I have requested a fiscal note, and that is being worked on, so I think at least some of the initial cost savings and costs of actually this bill, we'd know going into state government finance at whatever point in time the bill might travel there. So I don't have a great answer for you, Representative Winkler.
Well,
Winkler.
Madam Chair, I guess I just follow up. My memory is that there was almost zero in cost savings because we didn't really eliminate anything. We didn't reduce the functions that we provided or the services. We didn't get rid of the people who were doing the work. We just moved it around. And it just seems to me that if moving cabinet positions into fewer spots and replacing commissioners with directors doesn't really necessarily accomplish any kind of cost savings. And while there might be kind of this fashion for mergers and acquisitions and consolidation in the private sector, there's actually a lot of evidence to suggest that very seldom do those ever produce any kind of, is the whole larger than the two parts or more efficient than the two parts. So I guess I'm a skeptic, but if you can show that we can save money by doing this, I'm open to it.
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, you raise good points. I mean, this is not easy stuff. Frankly, taking the common administrative and technology functions and consolidating them kind of those horizontal function outside of out of the executive branch agencies is, I don't want to say easier, but it's cleaner. You can see that opportunity much more clearly and identify it. I would suggest that all of this is intended to position us for the economic realities that we all know are coming. We can all look at the models of state government revenues, and this isn't the last year we're going to be dealing with these kind of problems. So all of these bills attempt to position us to continue to do more and start the early kind of design stages, if you will, in this legislative session, and hopefully capitalize them on intelligent ways as we, you know, move forward in future legislative sessions and future biennium.
Representative Downey, being in state government finance in the past, but not this session, my recollection was that this similar type of language with the commissioners has frequently been in the state government finance omnibus bill. Am I remembering that wrong? It seems like Representative Kahn has had language in there eliminating some executive-level commissioner positions in the past. Am I correct on that? This isn't necessarily, not that you don't have great new ideas, but isn't this maybe a little bit something that's been talked about in the past?
Madam Chair, there's nothing new under the sun, and I am told that the minority party routinely offers bills to eliminate appointed positions in the executive branch of the opposing party. So I don't claim to have the history, and I'm certainly not attempting that here. I think this is a good move. It's really largely an organizational improvement move, and I personally don't have any political motivations behind it.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to follow up my colleague Representative Nelson's question specifically about the Commissioner of Transportation, because this may have some unintended consequences on your part, because I look at your list and I say, maybe the metro area transportation functions are better placed under the Metropolitan Council, and because many of us have long thought that we need to have better integration between roads and transit and land use planning and housing. And so you may, based on your response to Representative Nelson, not sure you agree with that. And so I wonder, Representative Downey, whether, again, there may be some unintended consequences from your perspective. On this topic of the Met Council, I have some ideas too that I want to share with you about how to make that agency structure a little more accountable to the public, but based on the legislative auditor's recommendations. But do you have any concerns that possibly, let's say, your bill is enacted into law and then the governor would say, let's take the metro area road functions and put those in the Met Council? And there may be some other areas where there could be some consolidation that perhaps might be unintended on your part. Do you have any concerns about that?
Senator Downey.
Yeah, a couple answers, and the current chair of the Transportation Committee might want to weigh in as well. So when I looked at this and actually decided to go ahead from my perspective and presumably think about transportation as residing within commerce, I did think about that quite a lot, because transportation is in our Constitution, and so perhaps it does warrant its own executive branch agency. I did what I did to kind of drive the maximum opportunity I felt, and I welcome the comments back. I don't know whether the governor, to your direct question about could the governor do certain things and would we have concerns about it, I guess of course, but I don't know if the governor has that authority under the reassignment of duties that he has. There would certainly need to be a number of statutory changes to support that, I think. So certainly I don't think he could do it unilaterally, and it would have to come back to the legislature. That's my understanding of the reassignment of duties capacity that the governor has. If somebody on staff wants to correct me, they can, but I think there'd be a little bit of a challenge just doing that and doing it unilaterally.
Thank you.
Representative Scalzi.
I'll pass. My question's answered.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two quick questions. First, I'd be very interested to know, I don't know if you know, where do we fall on the continuum in terms of other states? I mean, you mentioned 23 direct reports. I really don't know. Is that large? Is that right about in the middle? Do you have any sense about how many cabinet-level agencies is the norm?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, you know, I don't have hard data. That would be interesting to get that from Alec or somebody. Just my own experience having done consulting work in a large number of states, I think we're roughly typical. I mean, the agency suite that we have in Minnesota is, I'd say, roughly mirrored across the country.
Representative Simon.
Just one more. Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, I know you're trying to be, you don't want to be prescriptive here. Have you given any thought to being even more flexible and maybe just outlining the number that you're looking for, say shrink the departments from 17 to 9 and let the executive branch determine what combination makes sense? I mean, there might be a disagreement with you, that they might disagree that transportation should go in commerce, for example, but they may have other ideas about what should make the cut and what shouldn't.
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, that's a good idea, one actually I thought about before authoring the bill. I guess to kind of drive the conversation, I actually did make some decisions, and again, a lot of this was based on a roadmap that originated, well, I'm sure it originated before that, but the Carlson administration actually produced kind of an executive office type of structure, and so I largely mirrored what they had done there. So that's an interesting idea, perhaps a good idea, and one I certainly wouldn't rule out, and one we could talk about.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Downey, I tip my hat to you for your effort to, I don't know if this is my mic or not, taking on a really big idea. Remember one of my first terms, I took on a really big idea with the Metropolitan Airport Commission, ended up visiting seven different committees, and by the time I was done, my 12-page bill was one page long, and all I was able to do was stagger terms. But hey, it's a start. So these things happen. As you, I'm looking at all the lists of people here, I have a hunch you're going to be visiting probably 21 of the 29 committees in this place if you move this forward. But hey, you got to start the conversation somewhere. Thanks for starting it here and for agreeing to lay this over as we ponder it and let it percolate for a while, because this is a really big idea. Just a few observations, and I'm going to make a suggestion. When it comes to consolidating things, this is done from time to time. I remember back in the 90s, there had existed something called the Regional Transit Board. Some of us served on that board. We were kind of oversaw the bus and transit operations and worked in conjunction with the Metropolitan Council in the Twin Cities. And the Carlson administration saw fit to eliminate that board as being redundant, and I don't know what else they thought, but they saved a little money and they eliminated some redundancy and put it in Met Council, and I think probably just as many people and just as much time and just as much money is spent doing what the RTB used to do, which consisted of elected officials serving. And so anyhow, I just know we take stabs at this every once in a while, sometimes with great results, sometimes with no results. We just do stuff and we move things around. Just a comment about the transportation department. My colleagues, Representative Nelson and Hornstein, have already commented that there is a lot of federal legislation that is directed at DOTs. In fact, I think if you remember, through the 50s, 60s, and I think into the early 70s, every state had a different scenario. They usually had a highway department or something like that. In our state, we had an aeronautics division, which was actually appointed by the governor, was almost a cabinet-level deal, and several different organizations that dealt with transportation. And I think it was a federal initiative that had every state, I believe every state in the union now has a DOT, and that was sort of directed by the feds as they were going to start handing out cash and programs and suggestions. They wanted all modes pulled together under a commissioner at a cabinet level, and DOTs came to being. So there will be that, and as this moves ahead, we will be asking for it in our committee and talk through what that means and whether it's actually possible to roll a transportation department into commerce. First of all, whether it's possible and whether it's a good idea. They may be two separate things. We'll have that discussion. And then even in within the commission or the division that I oversee in transportation, we get some overlap in public safety. Public safety touches not only transportation, it touches crime, punishment, court system, corrections. They're involved in several different things. Transportation is a part of it. So sometimes these things you're dealing with here overlap with each other. But it's a thought just as you're moving forward and looking at making government a little more efficient and a little more streamlined. These will be important things to consider. One suggestion I have is on page 2, 2.23, 2.26, 2.27, you mentioned several retirement systems there. And one that I don't see here is the State Board of Investments, which I believe certain elected officers, constitutional officers, serve on. I can't remember exactly the makeup. I think the governor, the AG, somebody else, along with the professional staff. In our, and I want to make this point very clear just because the opportunity avails itself, our retirement systems in this state are actually in pretty good shape, thanks to the foresight and vision of the people who have gone before us as legislators and how they set it up and how they funded it. But these three funds in particular are rather well run, but they're run in some cases. No, as I look at these three, actually, I think it's there are three executive directors, but they kind of are all coordinated, I believe. And I'm not on the pension commission, but just a suggestion as you go forward and you think about the retirement systems around the state, if there was a way we could pull the retirement systems that affect our state employees and people that serve at the state level, even maybe down to the other levels of government, pull those into a retirement director's position. Do we need three? I guess that's a fair question. Do we need, how many of them are around the state? Can they all be brought under the purview of what the state is doing under the State Board of Investments direction, so we can put them all on as strong a financial footing as possible and keep them actuarially real as long as possible? Just some thoughts and suggestions as you're going forward.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Great ideas. And Representative Beard, actually, one of the strongest merits of Representative Simon's suggestion is we might be able to reduce the number of committee stops for this bill by by a factor of 5 or 10. So that I recognize the challenge and appreciate the suggestions.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, I assume it's fairly well understood the salary of the commissioners. Do you have an idea of the general staff each commissioner has? So, sort of, what is the salaries of the commissioner and the designated staff?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, I don't know about the designated staff, and I don't know if Mr. Shepherd would have any information to help you out there. I really don't. I'd be hesitant to comment.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, the commissioner's salaries vary a little bit, but they are in the range of $110,000, and there probably are one or two staff in each of these agencies that are deputies that are right at that level, and then it would there'd be other assistant commissioners and things below, a little bit below that level.
Representative Quam?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey. So then it'd be safe to say that it'd be at least $300,000 to $400,000, if you include benefits, maybe closer to $500,000 for each one of these that was decreased. I wonder if there is a raw estimate that you could come up with of your bill. I didn't see a fiscal note. We're not a fiscal committee. I just a curiosity of mine.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Quam. There is a fiscal note being prepared. I don't have it here, but if the bill would move on to finance, obviously we would. And I think you're right. You're locating some of the immediate savings. And I don't know, I'm hard pressed to see, in a biennium savings in the millions, maybe. So doing this, we wouldn't do this because we thought it's going to have some huge impact on our biennial budget situation. We do this with the thought that over time, as revenues are decreasing and we're not probably looking at increasing overall the scope and mission of what we're doing, we're trying to find ways to do what we're currently doing better, or maybe even carve things out, that this would at the highest executive level kind of facilitate and position us to drive some of those deeper changes that would have a much bigger economic and service benefit. So I guess I wouldn't want to position this bill as do this because of the cost savings. There are some, but I don't think that's the justification, at least not in my mind.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, I do laud your efforts on this. You have undertaken a number of different things to try to help streamline and to reorganize, and I know that your intentions are pure on this. I also want to just comment, and it was sort of on what Representative Beard was alluding to, with kind of grouping like functions. Given the fact that the governor has signed the permitting process, the expediting of permitting, maybe that's something we want to look at as more functional related activities and grouping them together as they may flow across the state use. I know that private industry, I know that local units of government have also experienced frustration in sometimes having certain functions over here and then certain functions over here and certain functions over here. And so maybe instead of just taking the raw department or raw division and moving and merging it, there might be an uncoupling of some of the services and then recoupling those with more similar services to streamline for the users, both at the public and private level. So just some food for thought as you're going through that process. And I know that discovery, as we continue to go through this, will make things, will present themselves.
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, that's a great point. And if you remember back to the Drive to Excellence report, it's got to be 6-8 years old now, they identified all of the overlapping systems and business processes across, I think, all 72 executive branch agencies and attached boards. And so we have, I think, a bit of a roadmap already laid out for us, and we're putting in a common accounting system. We've got a common licensing system. We're talking about common GIS. There are all kinds of things that are already in process that I believe if you took a look at the overall map of everything that's being done in the executive branch, you could find a lot of those opportunities, just like you described. And there's some good work going on right now, again, that kind of positions us to take advantage of all that if we do something like this.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Downey, to that point, I can also comment that it's not just the private citizens or people who interact with the agencies or the divisions and public entities. It's the agencies themselves that interact across that have also expressed frustration over the years about how they think the mousetrap could be built better, if you will. So I think that we're on the right track to at least take a look at how we might be able to bring forward such a massive endeavor and improve it for everyone involved.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it struck me with the comments about saving money, and as we did with Doerr at into manage MMB, it's a matter of we didn't save a whole lot of money from that because you're just taking people and taking them, not calling commissioners, but now they're directors, and there's still going to be the same number of people there. It's just in a way rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And not really getting to fixing the problem. I do laud looking at this. I mean, it's something we need to look at and study. I think studying this before we do it might be better, having a plan to look at it instead of eliminating the positions and then rearranging them. I think we'd be better off going the other way around, looking at what we can across division lines and whatever to rearrange and to make more sense. Figure that out first before we eliminate the positions. I think it might be a better way of doing this, because once you eliminate the positions and we find out, well, we really do need that position, now we're going to have to go back and reinstate them. So I think this may be the cart before the horse, without looking at the whole as a whole of everything we're doing and trying to figure out why we're doing it the way we're doing it. There may be legitimate reasons why we're doing it, and putting it before we just, like I said, we may just be rearranging the deck chairs on the boat and not really fixing anything.
Representative Downey? Okay. Is there anyone who would like to testify to this bill, keeping in mind that it at this time is going to not be voted on? It will be laid over until further notice. So if you would like to testify, that would be fine to do it now, although it will not be moving today. Did anyone else have any additional comments for Representative Downey or questions? Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And that would be my question is, I don't know how many department commissioners and deputies you've met with in the construction of this, but that would be my, excuse me, my going forward thought is that certainly there's, I mean, we're all sitting here thinking, well, maybe this would work in this department, maybe it wouldn't. We don't have a clue. And that's the next step, I would think, is to meet with the people who actually do this work, the boots on the ground, because they're the ones who know if it would work. And maybe they would agree with some of this, but I just don't see how we could possibly do this without a lot of dialogue with the departments.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Scalzi. Absolutely. And I've taken quite a few slices of commissioners' time on a number of bills, and this was one. They're coming on board, and they're getting acclimated, and they had to produce a budget and all of those things. So I just didn't feel like I could push this on to them at that point in time. But point well taken, and we're not going to push this faster than the executive branch could respond to it and absorb it and help us shape it.
Right. And just to that, Representative Scalzi, I think, you know, we're all looking at different ways we can do things differently in light of our budget situation, and that's one of the reasons I brought forth the Sunset Commission bill, as did Representative Banyan. And I appreciate what you're trying to do with this. I personally think that a better way to do this would be to kind of take it offline and have a whole bunch of people doing this, spending a lot of time looking at it and kind of reporting back and figuring out what makes the most sense. So I think we're both kind of looking at things from different perspectives, but I think it's good to have this discussion, because I think these are discussions that we need to have as we deal with this very difficult budget. So with that, is there any other questions or comments? Okay, we will. Representative Downey?
I'm sure I had a chance to interact with some of the folks from Department of Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs through this process, and a lot of them showed up here. Could we recognize them? These are the folks that men and women that put themselves on the line so we can sit here and enjoy this democratic process. I'd like to recognize them if we could.
I agree.
They would stand.
I agree. Thank you so much for coming. If you could just stand so we could recognize you, all of the veterans. Thank you all so much for all you do for us. Thank you, Representative Downey. We will lay the bill over. And next on the agenda is House File 978, Representative Sanders. Maybe Tom Ferber and Beth Frazier, if you could be on deck to join Representative Sanders. Representative Sanders, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, although I'm not quite clear on the motion. Is it redistricting? Yes. With that, Madam Chair, I'll move House File 978 to be passed and sent to redistricting.
Okay. Representative Sanders moves House File 978 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Committee on Redistricting. And do you have an amendment as well? Would you like to deal with that first?
Yes, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment. An author's amendment to get into the shape that I would like. If members wish, I do have Beth Frazier here from the Secretary of State's office to explain the technicality of the amendment.
Okay. Representative Sanders moves the A1 amendment. To the amendment, Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. This amendment changes Section 6 of the bill, I believe. Section 6 of the bill, which relates to mail ballot precincts. So precincts, small precincts in greater Minnesota where they don't actually have a polling place, they mail all of the ballots. And it would allow the mailed ballots and the absentee ballots to be counted together. Individuals who are not pre-registered vote by absentee ballot. Since all the ballots are together, they're all kind of the same type of ballot, it makes sense to just have them counted together instead of separately, which is different than ballots that are at a polling place and at the county seat, which are in two separate places. The new Section 7 in the amendment, adding Section 7, makes the same change to the subsequent section of statute, which was omitted from the original bill as an oversight. This has to do with local elections just on a question, which are conducted by mail. The new Section 9 of the bill on page 2 of the amendment has to do with certification of voting equipment, and currently state statute requires that it meet standards put forward by the Election Assistance Commission, which is a federal agency, and there are several bills moving through Congress that would abolish the Election Assistance Commission. And we don't want to have equipment certified by an organization that may no longer exist soon. And so it's just adding some comfort language or other designated agency so that if it were abolished, it would have to be, it would have to meet the standards put forward by whatever agency Congress gives that authority to.
Okay, does anyone have any questions for the author or Ms. Frazier on the A1 amendment? All those in favor, then, of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. Back to the bill. Would you like to describe that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 978 modifies certain election administrative and redistricting statutes and have been brought forward by the city and county election officials. This legislation is supported by the Minnesota Clerks and Finance Officers Association, League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Association of County Officers, which represents county auditors and election directors throughout the state. The intention of this legislation is to make the final election administrative responsibilities that cities and counties are required to carry out in the days immediately prior to to Election Day more manageable, while assuring voters have convenient and secure options to cast their ballots. With me today is Mr. Tom Ferber, the city clerk for Bloomington, who will provide the committee with an explanation and the need for the legislation. Also in the audience is Joe Mansky, Director of Elections for Ramsey County, if there are further questions to that. With that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to Mr. Ferber.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ferber. Please state your name for the tape and who you're with.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Ferber. I'm City Clerk at the City of Bloomington and also representing the League of Minnesota Cities and Minnesota Clerks and Finance Officers Association Elections Task Force. I'm here this morning to speak in favor of House File 978 and make some changes that are of benefit to the administrative elections. But I'd like to focus on Section 2 regarding redistricting. Last year, a bill was passed by the legislature that inadvertently included some cities that have odd-year elections for their city councils and have wards. And what that bill inadvertently did was would require those cities, and including Bloomington and St. Louis Park and Minnetonka, among others, to redistrict their wards for their council members prior to the legislature effectuating their redistricting for 2012. And really what would require us to do it actually almost immediately here. The census data has not been released yet, but we would have to have this work done this year for our 2011 elections by the first week of May. And so it's fairly unreasonable to do that, but it's also an issue of cost and redoing it again after the legislature has redistricted the congressional and state legislative districts. And so we're asking that this portion of the bill be moved forward as soon as possible and to allow us to redistrict our city wards at the same time that we're going to do our other redistricting. Not only the additional cost of this are of concern to us, but the real confusion for voters if we're going to be changing ward lines and that which may necessitate changes in precinct boundaries, and then we redo that again in 2012. I think that's an issue for our, we try to make our elections process understandable and easy to work with for our voters and our election judges, and I think this is a complexity that we can avoid by passing this bill.
Okay, any questions from members? The bill. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question and a concern, and I'm not sure who is the best one to address that. You know, when you've got the mail and absentee ballots brought together and counted, I have a concern about the notification, because with the fourth day before election, after business hours, I'm aware of a couple of instances of where there wasn't public notification, and when people did show up, they were treated less than hospitably when they came to observe. And our, you know, election process and that integrity thereof is dependent on the transparency of these operations, and that, you know, I don't see any language in here about notification. And then the only other issue I have with the bill is that when you delete the combined total of fewer than 500 registered on 217-218, when you're combining multiple precincts, that I have concerns about increasing the burden of somebody coming to a polling location, because now precincts are generated by geography and size, and as you combine them, you're increasing the size and you know, the traffic and everything else. And I like the idea of, you know, precincts being community based and not overly centralized. And so I don't like the idea of getting rid of the fewer than 500. I'd like to have some sort of a number in there so that we are assured there won't be mega polling locations.
Ms. Frazier, looks like you're the lucky choice.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Quam. Our office actually agrees with you that there should be a limit on the size of precincts, and we put that forward in 2007, and it was stripped out in committee, because the problem with picking a number is that there's always a precinct with one more voter in it, and the city doesn't want to have to split into two precincts because they have a precinct with, you know, 501 or 1001. There are some precincts, particularly in the exurbs, I guess you'd call them, that have thousands of voters. There's at least one precinct with more than 6,000 voters. So there are some fairly large precincts in Minnesota, and we would be happy to work with you on a limit for the size of precincts. I think that this language here is actually a little bit different, the language in terms of combined polling places. And because the because this has to do with two precincts and pulling them together in one polling place. If the city wanted to, they could actually just make it one precinct, and which might actually be administratively easier. So so I'm not sure exactly what this. Maybe Mr. Ferber can speak more to this specific language.
Mr. Ferber?
I think that well, first of all, I think it's permissive language, and one of the issues that a lot of cities are facing and is budget issues, for one thing, and the combination of polling place or two precincts into one location, although they're still remaining as separate precincts and run separately, sometimes also relates to the ability to find a accessible location for a polling place. It is getting more difficult. The state law does provide that public buildings must be available at polling places, but that there certainly isn't public buildings in all of the locations that we need, and so that falls to churches and other types of buildings that we use. And we're finding more and more in the last 10 years that very often some of the churches and other locations that have schools are not wanting to have a polling place in there as a matter of safety and homeland security issues for the schools, and a lot of them are in, you know, basically do not want outside individuals accessing their schools during the school day. So I think this is a language that is to open up the door a little bit for cities to have some more options. And I do agree, as Ms. Fraser said, that I think it's a bad thing to have large 6,000 registered voters in precincts, but it's really hard to get a handle on exactly what is that correct number or what should that number be, because there are a lot of variables in relationship to what you can do in a polling place. A lot depends on the parking facilities and the size of the room or gymnasium that you have, and, you know, and the number of election judges you have. And so you can have large precincts that do function well, and also as a function of redistricting and where we have to draw lines as far as what sizes of precincts and the availability of buildings.
Do you want to comment too, Representative Sanders, to Representative Qualm's question? Or?
Well, I think they both handled it pretty well. You know, again, one of the big things here that we're looking to do is provide some cost savings for the cities in this avenue, and this is a great way to help do that. I think they've spoken well to some of the safeguards that are there, but with precincts varying in such sizes that there is no way to, that I know of, unless Representative Qualm has a way to do it. I mean, I don't know how you come up with a number.
Representative Qualm?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we can get a updated copy to the testifiers, because the word two on 217 was deleted. Therefore, the language would open up to a municipality to use an anchor precinct and connect multiple precincts together. And I really want to avoid Minnesota running into the issue that other states and metro areas have had, of where judges have been involved in keeping polling locations open for extended hours because of traffic and crowds issues. So, you know, that's part of the problem I have, is that the word two is deleted, so that then there's, depending on how these things are drawn, you could have quite a few put together. And I applaud the idea of saving, you know, money, allowing consolidation. There's a lot of intelligent stuff, but I think when you delete the word two and you delete any numerical, now you have an open-ended that could have unintended consequences. And I think it'd be prudent to have some sort of a global limitation, whether it's three precincts or, you know, I'm not sure, maybe two isn't large enough, but I don't think we should have no number.
Representative Sanders?
Madam Chair, kind of discussing it here with Mr. Ferber and Ms. Fraser, you know, we're fine putting the two back in statute, so I can move an oral amendment that would reinsert two after four.
Okay.
On line 2.17.
Representative Sanders moves an oral amendment to reinsert the word two on line 2.17. Any discussion to the oral amendment? Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I think we're being a little overblown here, because this is, if I'm reading this correctly, this is permissive language for small towns, and I'm quickly trying to determine if this is outside the metro area or wherever we're at. I'm thinking of one instance in particular in the district I represent, where the polling place isn't even in the city. They actually come over to Shakopee to vote, because that's where the nearest public building that everyone can access is, and it happens to be on the main road home, so everybody stops in on the way home and votes there. It's no big deal. I'm trying to see how this could be a nefarious thing that would violate one man, one vote, the secret ballot, or any other thing that could be out there. Because I'm thinking that I have seen in the past, even down in Scott County, times where precincts are combined. The voting place is combined. Precincts aren't combined, but the polling place is, because it's convenient. Everybody knows where it is. There's enough room to get everyone in. And if I understand correctly, they don't merge the voting list. You keep the voting lists are separate, and your elections are run as if it's precinct X and precinct Y. It just happens to be in the same building, sharing the same parking lot. I fail to see the problem, and so I don't know that the... I think actually striking this is could give small towns and cities and jurisdictions more flexibility in case they have three small precincts and they want to keep it at the junior high or a central office or something. So I don't think it's necessary, and I'm not comfortable speaking as my colleague, but hey, this is an elections bill. It affects all of us, and so if the Secretary of State's office wants to put two back in there, that's fine. I just don't think it's necessary to do so, and I'd vote for maximum flexibility for these folks. That's what I would ask for.
Representative Nelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess along the same lines as Representative Beard, my precinct was combined in my city with the West 4 and the West 5 precincts were combined into one precinct in the last 10 years because of the very thing of not having an accessible place for the precinct 4 to vote in. And instead of having that two precincts voting in the one and the confusion of that, they combined them into one precinct in the same voting place, which is in a school which is accessible. And the other, and the old four, precinct four, there is no accessible public building that they could vote in. So, I mean, I think leaving the two out of there, it makes it permissive. It takes care of some of these situations because, as was pointed out by the testifier, we have to have accessible places for people to vote. And especially in some small towns, but even in some metro places, depending on where the lines are drawn, you can have, I mean, I also got another precinct where they vote outside of the precinct. It's two blocks outside the precinct, but it happens to be the only near building there that's accessible. So, I mean, we don't want to make it too restrictive so that make it difficult for cities to have proper voting places.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I can actually shine some light on this from personal experience. We have the city of Sartell lies in two counties, mm-hmm. three different school districts, and has 15,000 people. And we have always tried to segregate it best we can. Benton from Stearns when people vote because you've got different sheriff's elections, you've got different county commissioner elections and so forth, and people would come in the front door and they would see the sign that says Benton County Sartell and Stearns County Sartell back before we had multiple precincts. And then as you continue to move down, as we continue to grow, we found that we had rather sparse population in some of the St. Cloud School District that's within the city of Sartell, so we would try to attempt to combine some of the smaller Sartell precincts with at the same location, and I'm fearful that if we put two in there, that you'll actually end up tying the hands of local government, and within a, you know, with for all practical purposes, the size of a township, those are the politics that you have, and the political boundaries. And at one time, we were in two different congressional districts as well, so that just further continues to parse down where you want to try to deal with those kinds of things. So I would give serious consideration to allowing some flexibility and letting the locals make those decisions. Last point on this is even though houses of worship and school buildings are public facilities, there is some apprehension to allow elections in public schools because of the safety of children, and we've had those issues in central Minnesota as well. So keeping maximum flexibility, I think, is important as well, and segregating out by the different books and logs by precinct, I think that we've got qualified election judges that can help with that.
Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess we'd ask for kind of a point of clarification for Mr. Gehring, if possible, just on... We're even struggling over kind of the interpretation of this. Starting at line 215 through 2.21, the way that we read this is that it's for any city of the third or fourth class, any town, any city having territory in more than one county, and that the contiguous precincts in that same municipality applies to the third or fourth class. Would that be correct under the way that this is written?
Mr. Gehring?
Or does this apply to any city?
Madam Chair, Representative Sanders, I think the way that the sentence is structured, that Clause 2 is separate from Clause 1 so that any municipality could create a combined polling place. There's an or in the list there, so they're separate clauses.
Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is how I was interpreting it, so that line 215 and 16 cover your cities of the third and fourth class, or town, you know, and the across counties. So the intelligence and foresight of our previous legislators that did the code did have that covered. And then in 19 and 20, they cover additional ones, so that on 217 and 218, that isn't limited, and therefore, since it could be for a large metro city, that was my concern, because my interpretation had all these other very good points brought up were covered already by the foresight of previous legislators.
Did anyone else want to comment at the cities or townships on their view of the oral amendment? You don't have to, but if you'd like to. Welcome to the committee.
I'm Ann Higgins from the League of Minnesota Cities. I don't have much more to add. They've done a really good job of laying this out. But for the larger cities, particularly at a time of redistricting, the opportunity to combine polling places, not precincts, but polling places, is paramount because of the concern that we have for the amount of cost involved in renting facilities and of having to hire more people and deal with a situation that we otherwise are caught in and have to continue. We were just asking for discretion. I'm certainly aware of what Representative Quam has identified, and having worked with election officials for a long time on our task force, I know that many of the concerns that that Representative Quam shared are the concerns that they have to address at the local level. City councils pass on these decisions by the election administrators at the city level, so it gets through a process just like the one you're having right now at this level to consider whether or not those decisions are the ones to go forward. And I would just suggest our task force was strongly in favor of it. We had a policy committee review it, and they also supported it at the League. Thank you.
Representative Green, you had a comment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'd chime in kind of very similar to Representative O'Driscoll's example, but from the urban side, where I have a number of precincts that are very densely populated, and because of the wanting to keep precincts of a certain size, they are geographically small, but that means that they don't include any public buildings, houses of worship, or, you know, likely places that would be a good polling location, and as a consequence, it's really helpful to them if they can go to a precinct nearby that has a school in it that is open to them. So I like the idea of the flexibility, the discretion at the local level.
Any other comments on the oral amendment? Representative Sanders, are you still wanting to go forward with the oral amendment, vote on it, or
Madam Chair,
change
of thought? I think I'm going to withdraw the oral amendment and work with Representative Quam offline before redistricting. We, you know, it's kind of our intention to be as flexible as possible, but I'll work with Representative Quam to make sure that, you know, we can look at some of the safeguards there. But even looking at my own city, I mean, I live in a precinct that has none of those buildings, even though we're a suburb, and I have to vote in another precinct. So, and then, as Representative Beer said, as we get into greater Minnesota, we have some of those issues that we want to make sure that we're still maintaining flexibility for. So at this time, I'm going to withdraw the oral amendment, ask that it stay as is.
Okay. I had a list of a couple of people who wanted to ask questions. Not sure if you still had a question, Representative Nelson. Okay. Representative Beard, did you have an additional question?
Thank you.
Okay, then I think we're back to the bill. Is there anyone else that needs to testify for or against the bill? Any additional questions from members? Okay, seeing no additional questions, Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 978 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Redistricting. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and it will be moved to redistricting. Thank you. With that, that's the last item of business. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
We didn't do the minutes yesterday either.
Yep, you're right. We didn't have the minutes yesterday quite ready. Would you like to move the minutes, Representative Nelson?
I'll move the minutes from the two previous meetings. Can we do a one shot? Or
we can. Representative Nelson moves the minutes for March 8th and March 9th. Any comments or questions? Changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the March 8th and 9th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Meeting is adjourned.